Hey, Adam.
Yes, Mike.
Guess what's knocking at the forbidden door?
I'm afraid to ask.
Well, it could be a lot of things, I guess. Repetitive booking, battle royals, Hiroki Goto,
I was
tons of
just going to
things
say
going
those
on.
as you started to describe it, it's hard to tell whether you were talking about AEW or New Japan.
Have your choice here in
I
this.
feel like Adam Cole should have jumped in to cut a promo about AEW and New Japan joining forces. If I see that another time on YouTube when I'm trying to watch other stuff, Jesus.
Hey, if Adam Cole were to walk in to New Japan right now, does he tell
Everyone would fall asleep. Sorry, that was harsh. I
that is
don't hate
mean?
Adam Cole, but I'm just jumping all over that because I am living in fear that the rumored Okada Hangman Page match that Dave revealed then said wasn't true, but we knew was true, is going to end up being Hangman Page, Kazuchika Okada, and Adam Cole.
See, and I was going to ask you if it was up to you, does he go in as a junior heavyweight or does he go in as a heavyweight? But when you're in the mix in that match, you're a heavyweight. Got a
It is a
heavyweight
funny
name.
world where Alex Zane can be a junior heavyweight and Adam Cole can be a heavyweight.
Really? Well, sooner or later, we're all going to be all Atlantic champions, in our minds and our hearts. So we're all
All
winners there.
Atlantic champions, a truly a fitting belt for wrestlers from Japan to be wrestling for. I say that tongue planted firmly in cheek, that noted Atlantic country of Japan.
The Chinese flag on it. I mean, I thought OWE was like done, right? I mean, I think so. Like, what are you pandering for? What's
I
going on there?
love the look of the belt. If it was just called the AEW International Championship or the AEW Oceanic
There
Championship.
we go. The Oceanic Championship, but that would be all oceans. That would be
Yes.
fine. All the continents. That would be
Well,
fantastic.
because I love the visual of the belt outside of the name because it makes me think of all the flags hanging in the studios, watching wrestling as a kid,
You know what?
hanging in the old TBS studios. So like that I love, but the name leaves a little bit to be desired. It may be the most Tony Khan eFed championship or anything that they've done yet, but I'm not going to complain. I've seen people saying, the belt, the idea of the championship itself is stupid. I don't mind it one bit because you have a ton of different international guys in the company. You have relationships with a ton of companies all around the world, not the least of which is New Japan Pro Wrestling. You're going to be going over to the UK, I would assume, not only relatively soon, but fairly regularly after that. And so having a championship that isn't the world title, that can still be prestigious, can just be a good wrestling match title, and can be defended, as a main event on shows like that, or by wrestlers holding the title on non-AEW shows. I don't mind that one bit. If they basically do a good version of what the European title should have been in the WWF, I don't really see that as an issue.
I do get a pro wrestling boner with my old self over the fact that the WCW, when I say that, I mean Georgia Championship Wrestling's World Championship Wrestling television title, the one that Bob Roop and Ronnie Garvin and Jake Roberts at the end there would fight over, 84, 85, the one with all of those flags. Big fan of that. I was good in
Yes.
geography, which helped. And I was a natural with wrestling. So see all those things tying together perfectly for me. So I'm happy about that. And Tony Khan, from our generation, a little closer to your age than he is mine, but somebody obviously who was a belt mark. And I think that's okay to say. I think, a lot of us are. I love championship belts. I loved seeing the Central States title and this title and that title, and obviously you see how Tony's modeled his belts after ones from the past. They mean something to him. But where I have a concern is, even though I'm sure this is starting as a noble vision, you have the world title, the TNT title, the tag title, the women's title, the TBS title, the FTW title. They are going to bring in trios titles. It's a promotion that is based on three man or three woman teams, for heaven's sakes. There's going to be a trios title. You
And
have
there
all
should be.
and there should be, absolutely. You have all of the Ring of Honor titles that'll be floating around, and then
I don't really include those because
but
we know
you have
that
FTR, but when you have them being dragged around, it's the visual, and this is what I'm talking about with like when you bring in like AAA or New Japan's. It's I'm not saying it's going to lessen them, but for us watching, we can separate it and make cases and be fine with it. But I don't know if the average AEW fan, it becomes a lot of white noise, even if the matches sometimes are good. A lot of times the belts get watered down and they don't mean to be, but it happens.
Yeah, I see the argument. I've never been a person who's had a problem with there being too many championships
and
that watering things down.
A...
I think part of it is just the age and the type of wrestling I grew up on. I mean, when I'm watching, even now, like when I'm watching Stardom, I don't think, oh God, the SWA title waters down the white belt or the red belt.
But do we need a U.S. title and an IWGP Intercontinental title? Do we really?
Well, we don't
both?
Have an IWGP Intercontinental.
I know exactly, and we ended up with just one, and it made
and
a lot
look
more
how
sense.
Great that worked out.
Well, that's
thank God we consolidated those belts. Everything's been great with the IWGP World Heavyweight title. By the way, speaking of that, and speaking of New Japan, if you watched Dynamite last night, for one, David Finlay looked fantastic.
He's
against,
good
against Hangman Page, but like 12 seconds into that match, Hangman Page's nose looked really red and he kept like pawing at his nose. I'm like, oh my God, this Forbidden Door pay-per-view is cursed. Hangman Page is going to be out and they're going to have to go with Adam Cole. That's what I was thinking in my mind. And then we had moments later, Adam Cole inserting himself into the situation. But hopefully that will just be Adam Cole and Hangman Page wrestling each other to get a shot at the winner, quote unquote, of Okada and Jay White, which I would be absolutely shocked if that's not Okada.
Adam, I hate to tell you this, but you know, lifetime drinkers, you know, they tend to have a lot of broken blood vessels in their face, their noses, they get really red like that. And Hangman, obviously we know from his story, you know, he's had a lot of
depression.
We
know from
issues.
That match he took a drink from a fan in the front row.
It's so, you know. But hey, and I didn't like the way he kind of, and that's a story for a different show, and kind of the way he blew off the AEW, that whole cluster with coming to pass with their interim
I enjoyed
title
it.
Right now.
I felt like we were in a packed press conference room. It was 1984, and Hulk Hogan was comparing the IWGP heavyweight title and the WWF title and using car analogies.
But bottom line is Hangman Page, Okada, it's going to be a good match. How it plays into whatever storylines on either side of the fence, okay. Now, where I have a problem with this is the possible addition that has been knocked around of Adam Cole, which I don't like. It's not that I dislike Adam Cole, although I don't. He is not high on my list of guys that I'm caring to see right now, to be honest.
Well, particularly not on the Forbidden Door show. Like,
yeah.
If he's in some sort of multi-man match where it's like, you know, it's the Undisputed Elite against LIJ or something, fine. But I am not paying the money I am paying to go to Forbidden Door to see Adam Cole in a match in any way, shape, or form with Okada. Not what I'm looking for.
Now, I don't know if you want to move towards the luck that you got in that you look like you're going to get either Tanahashi and Moxley, or even better in your mind, Goto and Moxley for Chicago at Forbidden Door.
The tension. The unpredictability is just at a fever pitch going into Dominion this weekend as to whether it will be Hiroshi Tanahashi or Hiroki
Adam,
Goto.
I popped so hard.
What do you think?
I popped so hard when they came over that it was Goto and Tanahashi. They had to do a playoff, so Tanahashi had to face somebody. I died. Because I just remember talking about doing this show when they decided to add, and it was just evolution. It was time. It was progress. They were adding more IWGP championship matches. It would be more than quarterly. We would have 6. We would have 9. We were building. And Goto came along at a time where he was really good. It looked like it could kind of be his time. He was kind of always missing something, But then it didn't matter because every time he went after the IWGP title, he lost. Now, they gave him plenty of New Japan Cups, and it kind of became part of his thing, and it became an enduring part of his character. And is, you know, this guy who always could kind of get there and just would always miss it. And for the rest of his life, he'll never be an IWGP world champion. So to have him put in this spot, I just, for some reason, I just really popped over that, being a longtime New Japan fan who's watched Goto's career as just a way to, you know, as a roadblock for Tanahashi, literally to high fly flow over.
It's so, yeah, it's so perfect. It's also not perfect at all, but it's so perfect, well, like you said, for just how Goto's career has gone and how much he's been a complete afterthought. The idea that the reason he's available for this match is because he's the only guy, as far as a heavyweight in New Japan with some degree of credibility, that doesn't have anything going on right now.
He wasn't, like, booked. That's why they're doing this, because he wasn't booked.
That's why he's in that match. And so, I mean, it'll be, I mean, from a match perspective, it'll be a great match. They always, going back to, you know, his first big IWGP title shot against, against Tanahashi back in whatever it was, 2007, 2008, and how great that match was. This will be very good. But yeah, particularly once Moxley won, it became very clear that it's going to be Moxley versus Tanahashi. Because as I said on Twitter, at Adam of the Band, when this whole thing came down, the only way Hirooki Goto was winning that match is if AEW was insistent that that whoever they were going to have winning the interim title is someone that New Japan would not want to have Tanahashi lose to. And that list is longer than it would be before, because Tanahashi is not as protected as he used to be. But, like, I was thinking, well, if they put Wardlow into the Battle Royal, then maybe Wardlow wins the Battle Royal. Wardlow somehow beats Moxley, and then they have Wardlow versus Goto, because that's a guy that they wouldn't mind having lose. And then you just do Moxley and Tanahashi as a, you know, obviously a non-title big special attraction match. But clearly that's thankfully not the direction they went. And it sure as hell looks like we're going to be getting Tanahashi versus Moxley at Forbidden Door, which there are far worse things in life than that singles match finally happening and me being there for it.
To quote Pat Patterson, when I saw your tweet, I thought you'd gone banana. I really did, because you were overthinking it, I thought, with the Goto thing, because it doesn't work if you're AEW in any way, shape, or form if Goto wins that match, because zero cachet whatsoever. Zero. Well, zip nada, and they are not one to do a whole lot of explaining, you know, to their average fan base. So, you know, it just doesn't work, and Goto's been too far down the scale. I mean, you would have an easier time pulling it off with a Minoru Suzuki than you would, which is really juxtaposed when you look at what's taking place in Japan. Really doesn't make any sense, but, you know, same thing here with Goto. But again, Tanahashi, win or lose, which I would think, to me, he wins, and I would actually have him win here. I know there's probably some hardcore
winning the interim title.
Absolutely.
Well, there's zero chance of that happening, because New Japan is the G1 coming up, like, in a matter of weeks after that. And
yeah, but how long's Punk out for?
He's certainly not going to be back. There's no way they'd be doing this interim title if he was going to be back a couple weeks after Forbidden Door.
Here's the question, though, Adam, and this is interesting anyway, because as we get closer to it, it's because we hinted at it, talking about it with the Best of the Super Juniors. The G1 this year, depending on who's in it, it is you in theory can have Tanahashi lose matches in the G1 to guys who are wrestling in the United States or guys who are safe, because you're going to have a Brian Danielson or a John Moxley or this or that person that ends up being in that block. So to me, it's going to be really, and again, it's also fascinating.
You can do that, but the problem is AEW is not going to want their interim world champion gone for a month. The whole idea of doing an interim title is so that you have a champion on the show while CM Punk is out. It would, as much as I would love to see it, and if the G1 wasn't coming up, it would 100% be the right call. I just don't see any way in which it makes sense for either company.
Well, and there's what's fascinating to me, too, is because who do you, if you're AEW, who is okay for the G1? Like, Brian Danielson is such a mover of numbers and means so much to that show. and he matters emotionally, if not numbers-wise. I don't have them, but I know he's one of the top guys who helps move things on that show. And it's like, obviously, he wants to go wrestle in the G1. Are you going to stop him? Of course you're not. But it's like, then you're hurting your show. So maybe there's somebody else you don't want to send over there because he's already there. So that whole thing is going to be interesting. Just them working together and the fallout, what we hear after that weekend, what you hear that weekend.
Yeah.
Frankly, Adam, I can't wait to hear from you that weekend, yeah, and you and Jeremy, because it's going to be, that is going to be a live electric weekend.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be a live electric weekend, both in terms of the show itself, obviously, and then just whatever comes out and whatever we're able to glean throughout that weekend of how the buildup internally in the two companies to this show goes. As far as the G1, you know, I almost think in a weird way, you kind of have to think of, on the AEW side, who are guys like Hirooki Goto in New Japan that were, you know, available to plug in, you know, quickly, that didn't have something else going on that you could put into this Eliminator series. To me, the guy that would make all the sense in the world for the G1 would be Andrade. He's a guy who has history in New Japan as La Sombra through the CMLL connection, and he's a guy who the previous CMLL connection, obviously. I mean, that isn't where Andrade's working right now. But, you know, he's also a guy who has credibility. He's a big AEW star, but he's just sort of floating around, not doing a whole lot. So that, you know, that's a guy that I could see being a fit if, you know, the injury to a CM Punk makes, you know, a Bryan Danielson being in the G1 less likely than it otherwise would have been.
He looks huge. And that would actually be a perfect use of his time because they just don't seem to have something for him in AEW. I mean, at least something really to latch into, and until I see it happen, he's still going to be rolling around with his man in the back, cutting promos every once in a while, trying to buy Darby Allin.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, other guys you have to think about, you know, I could see a scenario where, you know, obviously we see the House of Black every few weeks on AEW, but a guy like Brody King, who's been, yep, so prominently featured on New Japan Strong as well, would seem to be a guy that you could easily put in the G1. And the other part of that is, I mean, as much as we, some people would like to see 3, 4, 5 guys from AEW, I mean, you have to figure you're going to have some New Japan Strong representation. I'd be shocked if Jonah is not part of the G1.
Fred
obviously
Rosser,
still stumping forever for Filthy Tom to be in,
yeah,
the tournament.
Absolutely. Of course, Filthy, you know, should be in there, no question. But, you know, the guy that replaced him up top, Filthy or Fred Rosser, obviously is somebody that they like. And I could see, again, depending on how big the G1's going to be, I mean, you could absolutely see Rosser in there taking up a spot too, which, again, if it's only going to be 12 people, which I can't imagine, I could see it being 20, but who knows? You know, again, he's going to be taking up a spot, so.
Oh, it's going to be at least 20. I can't fathom it won't be at least 20.
I would hope so, although, you know, again, I don't know how long they want to go with that.
Whatever it was, 128-man New Japan Cup. They're not doing a smaller G1 field than they've done in recent years this year. Thankfully,
yeah, good
I
point.
Can't,
gotta make
I don't
money.
Think Yujiro will get within 5 miles of it, but.
Well. Chase won't have the tag titles by that point, so he'll need to be rewarded again.
Oh, no, he's a guarantee for the G1. By the way, you mentioned Fred Rosser.
Yes.
Probably the guy I would, or the thing I would love to see with Fred Rosser, have him and Hiroshi Tanahashi team in tag league later this year.
I could live with that. I'd be good with that.
I want to see Fred Rosser
like
in
that.
Japan. I want to see Fred Rosser just, you know, with the ultimate baby faces like Hiroshi Tanahashi. But yeah, there's so many possibilities. Obviously, you would imagine, considering how prominently featured Ace Austin was in the Best of the Super Junior tournament, which we're going to talk about momentarily, that there's going to be some sort of impact representation in the G1. You would think, you know, a guy like Josh Alexander would be the best fit for that. But I assume if he still is the Impact world champion at that point, maybe they wouldn't want him in. I mean, I guess the flip side of that is they did just have the X Division champion in the tournament, so maybe it wouldn't, you know, maybe it wouldn't be a big deal. It's not like they run live shows every week, you know, with a taping schedule, you know, you wouldn't necessarily miss a ton. So yeah, who knows?
Well, take your personal thought out of this and just look at this from a, you know, marketing point of view and everything. Roosh, because he's available, Especially if you're bringing Andrade
he's
over.
Talked before how little desire he has to do something like the G1.
Well, that's because it's, you know, with Andrade, say you get Andrade to come over from AEW, you know, obviously Roosh is going to be on a per night deal there, so he's a free agent to do something. Is he a good traveling buddy? Is his name worth it?
I would go with no.
Okay.
I mean, I mean,
I was curious.
Considering how little interest it seems like in the past he's had to do that, and considering how wide open the doors and the borders are right now to bring people in, I'd like to think there would be better uses of that spot/money. We live in a world where pro wrestling NOAH exists, though, so you can never say for certain that a company is not going to just pointlessly bring somebody in.
Well, and they had a relationship with Impact, and I don't know. I have not paid attention to Impact. So other than Jonah, who would be the threat from Impact to go over Josh Alexander?
And Jonah's gone from Impact. He's finished up there. So Josh Alexander is really the only guy from Impact that I would have any interest seeing in the G1. Like, he would be great.
And would he have an interest in going over for that long?
What's that?
Would he have an interest going over for that long?
Yeah. I mean, that's a question, but I mean, he'd be a great fit. You know, I can't think of anyone really, you know, whether it be an Impact or elsewhere, that would be a better fit for, you know, for something like the G1 than Josh Alexander. We should mention, by the way, Mike, considering this is only our second free episode, of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare, presented by f4wonline.com/wrestlingobserver.com. But here, on all the free platforms where you get your podcasts, you may be listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else, we should mention that we are the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare, the longest running, regularly scheduled, if you want to call it that, Japanese wrestling podcast for English language listeners. We've been doing this for over 16 years now, closing in on 500 episodes. We're thrilled that not only is the show still going, but now anyone and everyone who wants to listen can. So if you are a longtime listener, make sure to spread the word. Tell your friends who follow Japanese professional wrestling as a whole, that they can listen to the show each and every week for free. And if you're a new listener, I believe they now have some of the old episodes up in the archives at Apple Podcasts or on Spotify. So you can check out a few of the older episodes there, or you can subscribe at f4wonline.com/wrestlingobserver.com, whichever URL you like to use, and you can get all of those prior episodes. As I mentioned, more than 450 episodes of the archives of our show, plus quite a few other things, Mike.
And if you you're a special number, and we're not sure exactly how this is going to work quite yet, but with so many new listeners coming on board and listening to the show, at some point, we're going to pull like a mystery number of somebody that subscribes to the feed, and you are going to win a Tony Khan created championship belt.
I was wondering where you're going there, and wondering what you were obligating us to do. But that was
transition. At that point, that's where a local ad would drop right there. That's where that's what that space is right there. This is an in lieu of promo. We're just filling time right now.
Like when you're watching old territorial wrestling on YouTube, and it's like the master tape. So instead of seeing like Bob's Discount Volvo dealership or something from 1983, it'll just have like a test pattern. We're waiting patiently for our ad reads, which are coming from our overlords at the Observer, at F4W. So you'll have those coming soon. But until then, you'll just hear us wax poetically about why you should subscribe still to the Observer, to F4W.
It's like the Family Guy cutscene room. But back to
no
the
idea what any of that just meant.
That's okay. Back to the Japanese professional wrestling, which that's something we know. Damn it. I don't know where we leave off.
There you go. It's something we know.
And people would ask, hey, why do you call it the Big Audio Nightmare? Here's a little taste for you.
There you go. We referenced the best of the Super Junior tournament as we were talking about everything going on leading into Dominion and Forbidden Door. So we should at least touch back a little bit on the tournament, on the best of the Super Juniors. I don't think we've talked about the finals since we last did a podcast. really good match between Hiromu Takahashi and El Desperado. I don't think it was anywhere near their match a couple years ago, the 2020 final with the mask ripping and just the, you know, the crowd reacting, even if they weren't supposed to. You know, I would have loved to have seen El Desperado win. I think you can make a really strong argument that he should have won. You know, the argument that a lot of people make, and I heard Dave Meltzer make this argument a couple weeks ago, that, you know, the situation that New Japan is in right now, not only the 50th anniversary year, but, you know, we're attendance is opening up as far as restrictions. We should have crowd cheering in Japan before too long. You know, and when that's happening, you're trying to rebuild, you rebuild around your top stars, Okada being the top heavyweight star and here Hiromu being the top junior heavyweight star. So I get it, but it just felt, it really felt like it was time for Desperado to get that Best of the Super Junior win and get that finals win over Hiromu finally.
Yeah, well, it's very repetitive for a lot of people, and for much more average New Japan fans, that's what you heard the most. Man, we've seen this. This is just part of the, you know, the glomming on top of booking decisions. They kind of put it on top of that. I'm a little bit more with you, although I'm fine with Hiromu winning this. And I am fine for now because of the situation and understanding, okay, it's like why Okada has the IWGP title. Yes, star power as things open up again. But I hope by the Dome shows we have a situation where Hiromu is main eventing that show with the junior title or whatever it's going to be, and then we're done. In 2023, I'd want to see him as a heavyweight. I want to see him out of there because the junior heavyweight division, again, you can't replace a star like that because of how good he is and how charismatic he is and how special he is, but my God, you got special guys there, and with Desperado, with the guys, again, with the LPs coming up, although he's going to be a heavyweight, but your Robbie Eagles, so many names, again, Ace Austin, Alex Zane, those type of guys, and we're going to see a flood of new guys come in as things continue to open up over the next, you know, year or so. You know, the future to me is very rosy right now without Hiromu in the junior heavyweight division, and I'm looking forward to moving on completely from it.
Yeah, well, I mean, you talk about freshness, you know, been here, seen it already. In the junior heavyweight division, that's definitely the feel with Hiromu Takahashi, even if the matches are great. The second you put him into the heavyweight division, and this is something that we talked about a couple months ago in the New Japan Cup, the second you put him in the heavyweight division, all of a sudden, every match he has feels fresh. You know, whether it be, you know, them finally being able to pull the trigger on a singles match with Tetsuya Naito, you know, him having a big title match against Okada as another example. I mean, think of, you know, interaction that I don't know that we've actually ever seen yet at all between Hiromu Takahashi and Jay White as another example. Yeah. Like, there are so many things you can do with Hiromu, you know, focusing more heavily on heavyweight than junior heavyweight division. So, yeah, hopefully we get, you know, the culmination of him wanting to main event a night at Wrestle Kingdom as the junior heavyweight champion. Hopefully that happens in 2023 and we can move on to whatever's next for him and whatever's next for the junior division, because I really don't think El Desperado is as far behind Hiromu Takahashi's popularity among the Japanese fans as people in the U.S. would believe. Just, you know, when you watch the shows, you see the amount of merchandise, you see the reaction for El Desperado, you know. If he was to have gotten this victory and won the tournament over Hiromu, you know, maybe that would have closed that gap a little bit more. That clearly isn't the direction they went. But, you know, I think there's more room for him as the standard bearer of the division, that being El Desperado, than some people think at this point.
He's one of the best wrestlers in the world, let alone one of the best junior heavyweight wrestlers in the world. And him, you know, getting truly anointed in 2023 won't be all that bad of a deal.
Because would make the argument, by the way, that he is the best wrestler in the world right now.
Oh yeah,
when you look at the variety of his matches, the different finishes, the fact that in a company that is so patterned, not only in terms of the booking, but in terms of how guys wrestle, he's such an unpatterned wrestler, and I mean that in the most complimentary way possible. And then just that's none of that even takes into consideration the physical charisma that he has and how interesting he is on promos, whether it be backstage or out in front of the crowd. He's as close to the total package, with all respect to Lex Luger, that there is in wrestling right now.
Yeah, the problem is he will never be able to know if he can carry the ball or not until Hiromu's gone. And when you put Hiromu in the heavyweight division, not only is Hiromu still a star, as you mentioned, you got fresh matchups and he makes other people a star. Unfortunately, with Hiromu in the junior heavyweight division, nobody can ever be bigger than Hiromu, because Hiromu is he's great. And again, Desperado, Taiji Ishimori, Bushi, you got your older guard there. Like, those guys mixed in with the amount of native talent that they have a, you know, a soup to nuts, you know, lower mid card, which everybody makes fun of, like Master Wado. And then you move up the chain of guys where they have a serious division with some serious guys who, again, you don't know how good of a boom period this could be for it until Hiromu's out of there and we see what happens next.
Yeah, I would agree. It's also interesting how, over the last couple of years, how heavily on the English language commentary side, they've leaned into talking about exactly what you said, that, you know, that there really is not enough air in the room for anyone other than Hiromu to be a star in the division. It's just, it's something that you wouldn't necessarily expect to hear on commentary. But the one thing that Kevin Kelly is very good at is finding a way to incorporate kind of the real issues that people have with what's going on in New Japan, and finding a way to incorporate that into kayfabe commentary. You know, we've heard him, you know, the gymnastics that he's been able to do in terms of the reaction to House of Torture, and find a way to spin that into something that somewhat works in kayfabe.
Well, he and Chris talking about Wado. I've had he and Chris talking about Wado and the fact that obviously it plays into other stories with Wado's interactions, obviously with a Desperado and guys like that. But, you know,
the story on commentary with Wado is that he sucks, and how long is it going to take him to not suck?
Well, and that's like, if Ace Austin is a sponge, then Wado is the one ply piece of toilet paper, and it's like this is a baby face, but they're able to not only weave it in, but again, this is me being with all the feels. But forget All Atlantic, I think Mid Atlantic, and I think those old PWI magazines and that type of thing, where they tried to blend in, and when it was done, it blended in great, and there was a justification. And that's where Kevin Kelly, again, being a little bit older than me, you know, not much, but a little bit older and more seasoned in some ways with that type of thing, you know, it's great. And he's able to do it so well, and he's now passing that on to, you know, as best as he can to the Charltons or to anybody else he happens to be working with. And look, I got to be honest, I do like the shout-outs to Gambino. I do miss Chino. He makes me laugh.
The thing with Master Wato, too, is, like, if you're going to have credibility as an announcer, you can't pretend like he's great right now.
Yeah,
because he's not. And if you're sitting there saying how great he is, and people are seeing him nearly kill El Desperado on a springboard nothing, or fall directly on his ass off the apron,
he's against, CM Punk's I think it was inspiration. Against Doki.
What's that?
He's CM Punk's inspiration.
that's low. That's low. Chicago's... At least Punk had legitimate injury excuse. There's nothing like that going on with Wado. He just doesn't have it. And obviously he's still a relatively young guy, but, you know, as much as they have on commentary along the edges tried to say that, you know, he is showing improvement. Like, I look at matches from him, you know, last year, really the last couple best of the Super Junior tournaments. And then you watch him here. I honestly don't see much improvement at all. Like, there are times where he has relatively solid performances, but in almost every match, something happens with him, whether it's a lack of instincts or just brutal execution, that just shows that he's a notch below everyone else in the division. Like, you look at that tournament, and I don't think it's out of turn to say that, you know, from a pure in-ring execution standpoint, he was the worst guy there. Obviously, you know, Taguchi's matches were hard to watch at times because they leaned so far into the ass-based comedy, quote-unquote, and Evil's matches, or excuse me, Show's matches, Freudian slip, since they're basically the same guy, Those are impossible to watch because of all the House of Torture stuff. But just from an actual in-ring mechanics standpoint, he was by far the worst guy in the tournament.
Well, let's tie it all in together with the matches at Dominion. The junior...
Well, first, before we get there, I do just want to give a little bit of a shout out or talk briefly about the guys that were either foreigners or non-regulars in the tournament, because by and large, they all performed very well. You mentioned Ace Austin, who I was a little slower to warm to in this tournament than others. But, you know, by tournament's end, I thought he had a fantastic run. I can't say that I'm thrilled that he's going to be a part of the Bullet Club going forward, but he looked great. Alex Zane, by the end of the tournament, I thought looked really good. The first few matches, maybe a little shaky, but the crowd really took to him. The match he had with Taiji Ishimori felt like a turning point there. Clark Connors, super solid. I can't say that I understand his gimmick, which is like Mantar meets Steve Irwin. I don't quite understand how he's a wild rhino that also has a finisher named after what poachers do, but in ring he was good. And El Fantasmo, a guy who, if anyone who's listened to this show for any length of time knows, I've not been that high on El Fantasmo, but man, he was great in this tournament. It felt like they finally found the right balance between athletically impressive guy and detestable troll.
He's so good. That's what drives me nuts when it's so much to the other side. And obviously that's him. He's literally playing a troll. So obviously that's the reaction he wants you to get. Although he drives me nuts with that because when he doesn't need all of it and he's so exceptionally talented. TJP, again, who's got the personality of somebody I probably wouldn't want to hang out with, but he's very good inside the professional wrestling ring. And he
that
and Francesco
match with him and Wheeler Yuta in particular was fantastic. Just yeah. as a straight, just no frills pro wrestling match, you're not going to see much better.
And Teton and Wheeler Yuta and Francesco Akira and TJP, who are teaming up to face off against Master Wato, who we were just talking about, and Ryusuke Taguchi, he of the ass based offense. It feels like to me, considering that United Empire could use some more gold, go ahead and pull that switch right there and give Akira and TJP those titles.
Yeah, I mean, they like to do that quite often with guys just coming in. Junior tag titles are a good way to ease someone into being a champion of the company. Yeah. And I mean, there's worse things they could do with it. I'm not dying to see a whole lot more of Wato and Taguchi as champions. Akira was interesting in the tournament because you could see him trying to figure out who he's going to be in New Japan. Like, if you followed him in All Japan, yeah. He's such a great underdog, fiery young babyface. And then here in New Japan, you know, the United Empire, they're heels against certain guys. They're babyfaces when they face off against, you know, the Bullet Club or House of Torture. And so, you know, I thought he had a really good tournament when you factor that in. And then the fact that he has so many new moves in his repertoire, like I'd say a good 40% of his offense is stuff he wasn't doing in All Japan. So there's a lot for him to put together. But by the end, I thought he did a pretty good job. He's still only what, 22?
Yeah. He's still very young. And I was talking about the old men before too. And I left out Kanemaru, you know, as far as with Desperado and Bushi and it, like they're just, that whole little foursome, as far as being corners of everything, what everything else is built on, they're fantastic. And now, Taiji Ishimori and Hiromu coming up on the 21st at Korakuen Hall. Is that where you go ahead and belt up Hiromu and then he has it for the rest of the year and maybe Desperado beats him next year? Or how do you go ahead and do this thing? Because again, if I would assume he's going to main event one of those days with the belt, but does he go ahead and relinquish it afterwards or do you beat him later? And I guess forget about that for a minute. Does he win it now?
Yeah, I would tend to think he would. I mean, my thought, and obviously people listen to this and within a couple of days will know, but my thought is that we're going to see a lot of Bullet Club losses at Dominion. Maybe I'm completely wrong. Maybe the Bullet Club is going to win every match here and still have a bunch of titles, have even more. But I just don't see Jay White beating Okada.
No.
I think we're going to see a lot of losses up and down the card from that point.
Way Jay White beats Okada, the only way, and this is, again, this is insane booking, but if you have Tanahashi win and he's in the G1, Jay White wins the IWGP title and he's the one in the States, but it still doesn't make any sense. It's insane to me.
Well, no, it's not going to happen because it's, we've talked about before, and I've been very adamant about this year in New Japan is about one thing. It's about Okada winning everything, being the guy, being pushed in the 50th year as the biggest star, the best wrestler in New Japan Pro Wrestling history. Really, I mean, to me, the only question this year for me with Okada is if he's going to win the G1 as champion, which we very rarely see. You know, and yeah. I honestly wouldn't put that out of the realm of possibility, particularly if he wins the G1. And then, you know, at that point, it's his pick as far as who he would wrestle at Wrestle Kingdom. And you've got no shortage of guys from AEW that would be huge matches, whether it be a Bryan Danielson, a CM Punk, or even a returning Kenny Omega on January 4th or January 5th. Because you have to remember, Omega still owes, in the booking and what the original booking was going to be, Omega still owes Okada a win. Okada was going to beat Omega at Madison Square Garden at the show that you and I were both at, that instead was Okada winning the IWGP heavyweight title from Jay White. So that's going to happen somewhere. And, you know, it's going to happen in New Japan whenever it does. And so, you know, maybe that's a scenario where Okada wins. He gets on the mic and says, well, I want Kenny Omega.
A warm and fuzzy, sentimental show we could do that we'll not do. You know, if you look at New Japan in their 50th year, and you talk about Okada being placed as one of the greats of it, which he already is, but, you know,
this year, whether you believe it or not, obviously Inoki and what he meant is on a different level.
But he's the face now.
But the idea behind this year is him being placed as the face of the first 50 years of New Japan Pro Wrestling. That's undoubtedly what they're doing.
Because it's like the evolution of it, and like this is the ultimate right now is what we have, is the ultimate is Okada, but like Tanahashi from that last generation, forget about what Nakamura is doing right now, enjoying himself, but like he's in the mix for the AEW championship, you know, the biggest championship on American soil. And the generation right before that, with Nagata and Kojima and Minoru Suzuki, who still draw, who still get reactions, and it's like, you know, the deep seeds of that company still to this day, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable, and in a different way, the Eddie Kingston stuff being talked about with Akiyama is another different type of version of that, just the All Japan Noah version of that.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, if that happens. I want that for Eddie Kingston so bad. And it came out this week that, you know, whether regardless of how serious Akiyama was being when he mentioned or not, he did say that he'd like to wrestle Eddie Kingston. So, man, that
free trip to the States, brother. He'll do it.
What did you say?
Free trip to the States.
Yeah, exactly. I would love to see that match. Well, more so I'd love to see it happen in Japan. I feel like that would be... Yeah. I don't know. Either way, I mean, if it happens in Japan, the fan reaction to Kingston isn't going to be what it would be here. If it happens here, obviously the fan reaction to Akiyama isn't what it would be in Japan. But either way, it needs to happen. You mentioned Dominion just quickly. The card, we've got Wato, Taguchi, and Tenzan against Hinare, Francesco Akira, and TJP building up to the junior tag title match that you mentioned. We've got Ace Austin, now a member of Bullet Club, teaming with El Phantasmo and Taiji Ishimori against Bushi, Hiromu, and Naito. Have to figure part of the deal with Ace Austin, too, is that when Phantasmo moves up to heavyweight, potentially as soon as the G1, Ace Austin can slide right in and be the new junior heavyweight tag partner in Bullet Club to Taiji Ishimori.
I was
Mike
just,
obviously is thrilled about that.
I was just, no, I was actually in just for a moment really thinking about a Phantasmo Naito feud where you save
fun,
Naito because obviously Phantasmo does so much bullshit. But it's like it does help save Naito a little bit, and you know the matches would still be good. Like I know it's a play they would be, people would be looking at it as such a huge step down for Naito, but it's like, that would be entertaining as shit.
Yeah, I would not mind it. It wouldn't be as much of a night off as if Naito was wrestling either of the guys in the next match. Toru Yano versus Doc Gallows. A match the world's been clamoring for. Something that back in the old Mid-Atlantic days they would call a main event anywhere in the world.
That's not even in Charlotte Courthouse, Virginia, at the local high school. I don't know if you're going to be able to draw with that one. But this is obviously to have a whole bunch of nonsense happened and all that. Although, you know, Carl Anderson, you know, he's got work later on in the show, so maybe it will just be limited to these two being goofs with each other, but it's hard for me to believe that. I have a feeling we're going to have others join.
Yeah, I would imagine so as well. Then we've got never open weight six-man tag title match, guaranteed to have a lot of bullshit. It is the House of Torture, Evil, Show, and Yujiro Takahashi on their way to their appearance in Glate, which I am still not thrilled about, ruining one of my favorite promotions, big shows, by appearing against Strong Hearts on July 1st. But here, they'll be defending against El Desperado, Yoshinobu Kanemaru, and Zack Sabre Jr. So if you've been clamoring to see Zack Sabre Jr. in a House of Torture-style match, I guess you're going to get your wish this Sunday at Dominion.
Boo, although I'd love to see Zack Sabre Jr., Desperado, and Kanemaru win those belts.
Yes, that would be great. We would have, that would be, as far as match quality after that, it would be similar to what we saw last year with Chaos holding the titles and how many great matches we got, you know, after the belts had largely been joke championships for quite a while. We then have, speaking of joke championships, at times, the IWGP tag team titles in recent years, but it is Bad Luck Fale and Chase Owens, who are somehow the tag team champions, defending against Great O'Conn and Jeff Cobb. Have to figure Great O'Conn and Jeff Cobb are winning the titles here on the road to some way, shape, or form, whether it be a regular tag, a three-way, a four-way, dropping the belts to FTR at Forbidden Door.
Yeah, no reason to be cute with this. There really isn't. And if FTR wants to attack them afterwards or something, I'm fine with it. But yeah,
that's actually a very good point. I wonder, like, I can't imagine we're not going to see somebody from AEW show up on this show unexpectedly, whether it be Hangman Page showing up to challenge the winner of Okada and Jay White, or FTR doing a run in here. Somebody surprising is going to show up. Is going to fly in and do this, I would think.
Yeah, and the obvious, you know, Moxley. You know, because of Tanahashi and Goto. So it's like, you know, the obvious names are there. But FTR is one that, you know, it would make sense. And again, you show that tape on Dynamite or Rampage or whatever you're going to do with it. You know, probably
you'd like to think they would, but who knows?
Well, that's Excalibur can run it down for everybody. But
we've got a spare second and a half. We can fit it in.
That's interim world title eliminator match. Tanahashi Goto in the middle of the card, as it should be, frankly.
Yep.
Although, yep.
We talked about that at length earlier. Tanahashi is winning here. There's zero doubt there. Then we have King of Pro Wrestling match.
There we go. Jerking the curtain for this one.
Shingo Takagi and Taichi, who had a hell of a match in that wacky 30-count stipulation match a month or two ago, but they will have another go with a different stipulation for the KOPW provisional title, which will then lead into, you'd have to figure there's going to be a lot of interference and ref bumps and everything else going on in the never open weight championship match, as it's Tama Tonga defending against Carl Anderson.
The KOPW title is trash, and I don't want anything to do with it. The never open weight title, maybe Tama Tonga can do something with it. I'm kind of over that now, too. Although Tama Tonga,
it was fun when it was the Goto, Ishii, Shibata, and occasionally others destroying each other title.
That was the Haas title.
Long removed from that.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like I'd rather see a high speed title in AEW than necessarily this all Atlantic title. But, you know, Tama Tonga as a singles, you know, he's been around a long time now, and we haven't seen him have the ability to possibly take it to another level. And, you know, him and Carl Anderson, very familiar opponent from Impact. I don't know what nonsense, if any. I'm sure there's going to be plenty.
If any?
I know.
You think there's going to be a straight-up match here You think there's a chance of that? I admire your optimism.
So I have no idea who's going to end up winning with this, because I have no idea where they could possibly, you know, spiral this story off of. And frankly, even whoever, no matter who it wins, they could still be laid out completely after the match anyway. So we shall see.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if this does not have a have some sort of wackiness to it, whether it be the finish or elsewhere.
U.S. title match, three-way. Juice Robinson,
In theory, a three-way. I don't know how Juice Robinson comes down with appendicitis last weekend, and then he's going to be ready to defend the title here.
Yeah, Cody's pec was a better idea to do that than it would be right now with Juice, but whatever, man. You know, we'll see what happens here. Sonata and Will Ospreay's a fine one-on-one. If you got a third party in there and you want to shoehorn them in place of Juice, fine. If Juice is not getting surgery and can somehow gut his way through this, okay, sure.
I got two words for you as a replacement.
Who's that?
Yujiro Takahashi.
I thought you were going to say Billy Gunn. You know,
that
Ospreay's obviously on that Billy Gunn diet, though. Boy, he came out on AEW looking big Billy. And look, Sonata and Ospreay is a feud I like. I would try to belt up all of United Empire, so I'm fine with him winning the U.S. title. But I to me, that makes a lot more sense with Sonata chasing it. And obviously, you know, again, I'm assuming Juice the title would be coming off.
Yeah, I would think one way or the other here, particularly given the fact that, again, it seems very unlikely that he would be in there. Maybe the recently returned Kenta is able to institute some version of a Freebird rule and be able to defend the title for Juice Robinson.
Maybe bonkers.
Maybe he's still got the old dented briefcase around and he can cash that in to be the proxy champion for Juice Robinson.
Dude, who are the people that don't want to see Tanahashi Punk because they wanted to see Kenta and Punk over the G? It's like, dudes, I know you're... Yeah, you could tell who's a fan of 2005 Noah. Holy smokes. Who was really influenced by the Noah guys coming over for WrestleMania? Those people. That's for sure.
I'm sorry, I'm not following your point there.
Well, it just, again, if you were a fan of that time, if you would rather see Kenta and CM Punk as opposed to CM Punk and Tanahashi, like...
What does that have to do with WrestleMania?
Didn't the Noah guys... No, I guess it was all Dragon Gate. But it's like you had to be a fan of that time, and that had to be your biggest favorite time in wrestling if you'd rather see a battle over the GTS than a battle of Tanahashi and Punk for a title.
Well, yeah, it's the question of
stupid.
A great match, which you'd get out of Punk versus Tanahashi, or waiting to see someone hit a GTS. So yeah, I know which one I would take.
Interesting thoughts.
When you speak about Tanahashi, by the way, obviously we the main event of this show, first we said, you know, Dominion, it's Okada versus Jay White. We talked about that. You know, I'd be shocked, absolutely floored, if Okada doesn't win. But you talked about Tanahashi, the other big Tanahashi related news and arguably even more exciting news than anything we've talked about with New Japan so far. Stardom and New Japan finally converging for a joint co-promoted show, obviously under the Bushiroad banner. It's the 15th anniversary year of the parent company of both Stardom and New Japan. But November 20th at the new Ariake Arena, we're going to get Stardom and New Japan joining forces. And it doesn't sound like it's just going to be some Stardom matches and some New Japan matches. We're going to have a few mixed Stardom and New Japan versus Stardom and New Japan matches.
I am so happy to finally move on to the phase where people will complain about how this thing is booked, as opposed to the fact that they are not running shows together or haven't run shows together or don't consider Stardom on equal footing and all of that same old talk over and over for so long. At least it's finally coming to an end now. And good, you know, the women of Stardom are just too good. And I would much rather see, and again, look, they need to be separate run companies. You need to have a roster. You need to have an undercard filled with young guys and young prospects that you have and undercard feuds and all that sort of stuff. But sometimes it's great to have super shows, and it's great to have shows where there is not that sort of dead time, because you go from the high-speed title match to the, you know, whatever it is, the IWGP junior titles, to this, to that, with just the best talent arguably in the world. You know, again, for women's wrestling, it depends on what kind of women's wrestling you like, but I mean, you know, even if you love American wrestling, the top of Stardom's roster is, again, it's unquestionable.
Well, yeah, the middle to even arguably the bottom of Stardom's roster is unquestionably better than what we see, I think, in AEW or WWE. I know that somehow, like, Charlotte Flair fans are going to come after me if such people exist. But yeah, I mean, the potential for this show, particularly given what was already teased some, you know, 5 months ahead of time in the press conference that took place earlier this week, you know, Starlight Kid saying that there's only one person for her to team with, and that's El Desperado, and throwing out the idea of doing her and El Desperado against Izumi and Hiromu Takahashi. Could you imagine that?
I am right now.
It's one of those matches where your brain would have had no reason, no logical reason to conceive of it being possible. And then the second you hear it, it's like, yeah, that is absolutely 100% the match to put on for a show like this.
I remember when Julia had the pirate gear, that and Desperado would have been perfect at that time. But, you know, I just hope that Cosmic Angels doesn't get anywhere near Great O'Khan, who's still probably really feeling his oats after coming back from Vegas. Just stay, keep them away.
I think we're going to have some Great O'Khan Oedo Tai interaction, given the jawing back and forth at the announce table between the Great O'Khan and Natsuko Tora on the last Stardom pay-per-view. So we'll probably have something fun there. The other really exciting potential is, you know, basically was brought up by both wrestlers at the press conference, that Hiroshi Tanahashi and Mayu Iwatani want to team together on this show.
Which, again, perfect. Perfect. That is perfect. It's no more perfect than that. It really isn't.
Now, could you imagine Tanahashi and Mayu Iwatani against Okada and Utami Hayashishida?
You know, the reason that the both companies are where they are right now, you know, those two backbones. So, yeah. I mean, it's perfect.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you could not find two stronger parallels between the two companies than Tanahashi and Mayu Iwatani. I would also imagine that, I mean, clearly, given that Saya Kamatani has been not only in a lot of ways the featured wrestler in Stardom this year, so much of the year has been built around her with the Wonder of Stardom title, the white belt, and establishing her as a real main eventer. She's also been one of the arguably the most featured person among Stardom wrestlers on the relatively recent Stardom appearances on New Japan shows. For all the world, before everything that's gone down in the whole sordid story with Kota Ibushi and New Japan, it sure seemed like we were heading towards potentially an Ibushi versus Saya Kamatani match, or, you know, them being on a team together somehow. They were going to have interaction. So if, you know, if that situation is not resolved, if he's not healed by then, if he somehow isn't back in New Japan, you know, it'd be interesting to see what they have for Kamatani, you know, compared to what they were probably thinking.
Ibushi and Sayuri never crossed paths at any point in their lives, did they?
That's a good question. who knows? Actually, I'm going to look that up.
Way
here.
Back at some sort of kickboxing tournament or something like that, way back in the day. Or
maybe somehow on a Smash show, maybe Ibushi made an appearance as Sayuri was debuting alongside Kushida. Yeah, we should mention, by the way, Kushida's non-compete coming up very soon, and there were a lot of people talking about the possibility of Kushida coming back to New Japan as early as June, so that might be something to look out for over the next few weeks as well.
Can he be Bullet Club too?
Oh god,
no reinventing Kushida in that way, please.
Yeah.
You know, and as you're looking that up too, you know, there's not much really, at least for me, to say at all about the Ibushi stuff. At the end of the day, everybody's been docked 10%. you know, him and Kikuchi and Ibari, all of them. Kikuchi,
yeah, apparently, Kikuchi's been moved over to
which they had already talked about,
closet office in the basement.
Yeah, everybody got their hands slapped, and I'm sure everybody, please watch your mouths next time and watch what you put out online, especially you, Ibushi. Please stop that. And, you know, again, what his mental state is and all that sort of stuff, we shall see moving forward. But hopefully, at least this aspect of it has moved forward. And that's it for that part of that drama.
Yeah, hopefully so. There really, to me, isn't a whole lot else to say about it, like you said, until we see, you know, if Ibushi comes back or if he doesn't come back. Until then, we're sort of in a holding pattern. On the Stardom front, as we get close to closing the show, just wanted to mention major shows coming up prior to the Five-Star Grand Prix getting underway. We've got on the 26th, their next major show in Nagoya, double main event cage matches, Tam Nakano against Natsupoi, which, you know, that if you listen to the show for a long time, you know that is on my extreme short list for match of the year in 2021, the match they had last April. So can only imagine what those two are going to do in that. And then when you talk about cage matches and people that are going to be motivated to do absolutely insane stuff, just think back to the ladder match that was the final of the six-person tag team tournament in Stardom. I believe that was last year or earlier this year. My mind is getting a little hazy. But think about that and then overlay that into a cage when it's Mayu Iwatani, Hazuki, and Koguma. Remember that crazy dive Koguma did off the top of the ladder in that that ladder match?
Yes.
Taking on Tommy Hayashishida, Saya Kamatani, and Izumi.
Yeah.
Gifts will be flying.
That they absolutely will. And hopefully everybody stays in one piece afterwards. But yeah, like, it's going to be their own little cage of survival, because they are going to be all over the place, and it'll be interesting to see how much blood is.
Oh, I don't think you'll see blood unless it's accidental.
Well, I wonder with all everybody working, how many sides of eyes get accidentally cut open and such. And again, it's fascinating, because again, I wouldn't. When's the last time we've had a six woman cage in Stardom?
What's the first cage matches in Stardom history?
If they are the first, okay, well, there you go. So I'll be damned.
Yeah, so we've got that coming up in a couple of weeks, actually the same day as Forbidden Door. So if you're wondering if Stardom was going to have representation on Forbidden Door, you look at everybody booked on the show, the big pay-per-view on the 26th, and it certainly doesn't seem like there'd be anybody available. You then go to July 9th as their next major show after that. High speed title, Izumi versus Momo Kogo, by far Kogo's biggest match in Stardom to date, both, you know, in terms of going after a title, but even more so just, can't she keep up with Izumi? Yeah, I mean, Izumi is the reigning queen of this style of wrestling, and, you know, Kogo's good and shows potential for improvement, but that's a big step up trying to do a high speed match against the likes of Izumi. Wonder of Stardom title, the white belt. To me, this is the true main event of the show. Saya Kamatani against Starlight Kid.
A question for you about Corican Hall. The second match between Tam and Natsupoi, is there a gimmick attached to that or anything attached to that match?
I'm honestly not sure. There was some talk that was going to be a cage match too, for some reason, because they wrestle again on the 28th. I don't think that's the case. I think that's just a regular straight match.
Huh, okay.
I assume there'll be clarification between now and then. But yeah, that is scheduled for June 28th, 2 days after the Nagoya show. And then, yeah, the July 9th show, like I mentioned. Saya Kamatani against Starlight Kid for the white belt, which has match of the year candidate written all over it. And then for the red belt, the World of Stardom title, which should be tremendous as well, particularly if you like your wrestling with a lot of kicks. It could be the 2022 version of a Katsuhiko Nakajima versus Kenno style match here, but instead with Shuri and Momo Watanabe. I don't see any way that Watanabe wins, unfortunately. As great as Shuri is and as good as a lot of these title matches have been, her reign to me kind of feels like these defenses are just killing time before the inevitable big title match and potential title change against Julia.
Yeah, maybe, but you know, I'm good with the voyage.
So, yeah, I mean, they're not, the matches are good. I just, there's just a bit of an air of inevitability around a lot of the defenses until we get to that point. But as we've talked about and as I've written about, you get about halfway into those matches and then it's like, oh, it doesn't matter. This is awesome. And I'm buying into the near falls, even if I don't believe it going in.
Julia has that effect on everybody. The shadow of Julia is just too much of her most to bear.
It's kind of, it's in a different way. It's actually not dissimilar from Hiromu.
Well,
just in the sense that if Julia's there, like a lot of the attention, a lot of the spotlight is going to her.
Yeah.
That's not a bad thing. It's
no.
just a thing.
And Kairi, you know, too, we'll see as it moves forward too, because obviously she's going to be the easiest bridge for newer fans who are now going to get into Stardom as Stardom continues to grow. And again, if any crossover fans, if any new fans are created here, you know, I'm sure they're going to remember Kairi Sane in WWE. So we'll see how much she's out there.
Or WWA. I was a big fan of that those Australian pay-per-views right after WCW died. So maybe she they could do a revival of World Wrestling All-Stars.
Is it McManus?
We could see a mixed tag with Nathan Jones teaming with Kairi.
Oh, my God. Reverse Battle Royal with Jeremy Borash getting in there, too.
Yes. The pre-TNA that was WWA All-Star Wrestling.
Oh, Jeff McManus, I think.
McManus, yeah. Whew. What a time. I'll tell you what, you talk about things that are chaotic and weird and out of control and they're hard to keep track.
This show?
It's not quite a reverse battle royal, but All Japan, they are just throwing everything at the wall right now. Like if you've been following it even from afar and you're like, oh yeah, Jake Lee, he's a heel. He's got that Total Eclipse group. Kento Miyahara and Yuma Aoyagi are a team, you know, part of the whole NextStream group. They've thrown you for a loop if you've been away for a while. We've got now Jake Lee and Yuma Aoyagi forming a reluctant team. Aoyagi has left NextStream, which includes his own brother. They're no longer in the same group. Shotaro Ashino, who seemed destined to lead the Evolution group, he's now left that. He's no longer with Hikaru Sato and Dan Tamura. He's now part of a Wrestle One alumni group of sorts with Ryuki Honda and Seigo Tachibana. Somebody don't let Jiro out of his contract so he's not a part of that group. Jesus. Voodoo Murders are back in All Japan, Mike. Are you excited about that?
Well, when I saw who was doing battle with them, it's certainly a feeling out of the past. That is for sure.
Voodoo Murders are back. Suwama has joined Voodoo Murders. He's the main guy there. Minoru Tanaka, in addition to his duties in GLATE, he is now in All Japan in Voodoo Murders. And Yuji Nagata has appeared on the Jumbo Tsuruta Memorial Show that has not yet aired, that took place, I believe, last weekend or the weekend before. He showed up and saved Hikaru Sato and Dan Tamura, and he is going to appear on a few All Japan shows, going against Voodoo Murders. We also have coming
old guys,
up on
easy
the...
money.
What's that?
Old guys, easy money time.
Yeah, I'm thrilled to see a guy like Nagata getting a chance to see him go somewhere and do something of note is always fun. His little escapades, his excursions away from New Japan time to time are always entertaining. We also have Hikaru Sato is going to be defending the junior title against Tiger Mask coming up, which, you know, isn't something that I don't think would have been on a lot of people's radar. And maybe what I find most exciting, and I guess you'd have to have been a real hardcore fan of All Japan over the past, you know, 3-4 years for this to really mean a lot. But Naoya Nomura, who I've just been harping on a lot for the past couple of years in terms of a guy who looked like he was ready to be the next guy in All Japan, be, you know, the 1A, 1B, whatever you want to say to Kento Miyahara, such just a classic All Japan feel of a wrestler. He broke his neck. He was out for almost 2 years. Then he comes back last December, announces he's returning to wrestling, and in the same announcement, standing in the All Japan ring, next to Suwama says, "I'm also leaving All Japan. So my return to the company that I started with will be my last match in the company." So he goes out, has a really good match with Yuma Aoyagi, his longtime tag team partner. And then he's gone. Don't hear anything about him. He shows up for a random capture show in March. Don't hear about him for a couple months. Then he's on a couple of Gambare Pro shows, team with Mizuki Takase, as he part of a team called Real Blood. And then those two guys show up unannounced in storyline and mess up the main event before the main event starts of the All Japan show a couple days ago. It's a wild, chaotic scene. And now Nomura is back, at least for one match. I don't know how long it's going to be. And he's going to be wrestling Hokuto Omori on an upcoming All Japan show. So just a lot going on in All Japan right now.
God, when did he have the tag titles with Jake Lee? It feels like it's like decades ago now.
Think about pre-injury, pre-pandemic, pre-Jake Lee turning heel. That's a really good point. That feels so long ago. So, yeah, there's that.
We live in an era where 5 years is 50.
Yeah, it's weird because the pandemic, in some ways, it's like particularly the year or so where just nothing was happening and we're all just trying so hard, like still are, but trying so hard to just not die.
Really?
Like that year, like outside of the temperature, like you could not tell the difference between like April and August and November. Like just nothing happened. It kind of is a weird time warp, but a lot going on in All Japan. I guess you could say a lot going on in Pro Wrestling NOAH. The only thing that isn't going on is bigger crowds. They still are struggling to draw 500 at Cork and Hall, where, you know, New Japan, Stardom, Dragon Gate are all starting to get back to close to pre-pandemic levels at Cork. And so, I don't know. They brought in Timothy Thatcher. I don't mind seeing him wrestle. He's good. But, you know, NOAH is just such a weird company because everybody else, to greater or lesser degrees, like, they've got their plan for booking. But if something gets over, then they run with that guy. Or if something isn't over, they scale back and they pivot. NOAH doesn't do that at all. Like, they're just booking what they're booking. And if you show up, you show up. If you don't, you don't. They don't seem to really care. Cyberfights doesn't seem to care. And so they just do what they do. I'll be very interested to see what the crowd is for Cyber Fight Festival coming up this weekend, though.
Yep, June 12th. 776 matches on this show.
Pretty close. We've got 14 matches, and we're not going to run them down all as we close the show out, because if we did, this would be longer than our annual G1 preview show. But I think the thing that stands out to me the most is just with this many matches on this show, you know, with so many promotions all under the Cyberfight banner represented, there's not a whole lot on here that's really, really exciting. I mean, you've got, you work your way up to the eighth match on the card. You've got Sugiura Goon. I don't know. I mean, just you look at this. It's Takashi Sugiura, Kaz Fujita, Masa Kitamiya, Daiki Inaba, and Shuhei Taniguchi teaming up to take on Michael Elgin, El Hijo del Dr. Wagner Jr., Rene Dupree, Simon Gotch, and Timothy Thatcher. So you've just got a bunch of stuff really jumbled together. You know, you had a lot of those guys in the 10-man tag that took place a couple days ago. That didn't really wasn't a whole lot. You got Rob Van Dam on the show, though, so I guess you got that going for it.
I was blown away with that. With it, just him and Yoshinari Ogawa and Hayata.
Rob Van Dam's like Nick Wayne on this show compared to a lot of the guys booked.
Jesus. I mean, I want to see Shiozaki and Kojima because I like Kojima. Although, you know, I don't know if anybody necessarily cares. You know,
it'll be really, really good. I don't know. I don't know if how. Well, I guess we'll see how effective after so many years of being down the card, Satoshi Kojima is as a main event draw on a big super show like this.
You know, Shoko Nakajima and Yuka Sakazaki isn't necessary. I mean, I understand why it's in the semi-main event position, and I know it's going to be really good, and that's cool. Like, that's going to be nice to have to break up some of the stuff on this show. It's going to be
it'll be a great match, and maybe the best match on the card. But
and when you look at the top of that card, it's going to be kind of refreshing. I think one could argue after a couple of those matches.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I think it's also, though, emblematic of just, in some ways, how stale Tokyo Joshi Pro is. Yes, it's a fun company. They've got some good wrestlers, but, you know, and again, Shoko Nakajima, Yuka Sakazaki, both great, but my God, like, it would be so nice to, at some point, see someone new in the mix on a major show for that championship. Yeah. And you know, we talked about Stardom earlier. You look at a couple people that are so prominently featured in Stardom right now in Natsupoi and Mirai. They're legit main eventers or near main event level wrestlers in the biggest women's promotion in Japan. And yet in Tokyo Joshi Pro, they're lucky to, to be in the middle of the card, much less the top of the card. So it's, I don't know. It'll be good, but you'd like to see the spot used for someone. I don't know. They could use it more. Kenno versus Daisuke Sasaki, no disqualification match.
Eh.
Daisuke Sasaki is one of those guys that I know a lot of people really like, and I just don't get it at all. Like, he's fine, but like anytime I see him in there with a credible guy from a major promotion, I just don't buy it. Like, I'm sorry. I just don't. It just doesn't do anything for me.
It's,
I guess,
the hair.
He's an acquired
taste. Is it the face?
What's that?
It's the face and the hair, isn't it? You want to smack him. He looks all slimy.
I don't know. It's all for me. It's a bridge too far to get me to believe him against a guy like Kenno. But I know I'm in the minority among hardcore fans that follow Japanese wrestling. So it's just, it's funny because he's here in the third from the top, and another guy that I kind of feel the same way about, and I've never been able to accurately describe why or even be able to understand why for myself I'm not a huge fan of the guy. It would be Atsushi Kotoge, who's in the fourth from the top match, which will be one of the best matches on the card, as it's Kotoge, Yoshiki Inamura, and Katsuhiko Nakajima, who up until a week ago wasn't booked on this show.
Why?
But he's...
why?
I don't know. Maybe he was two matches away from being booked on the same match as Suzuki. And so he didn't want a job to him. I don't know. Suzuki isn't even in. He's not even in the 10-man.
Holding out hope he'd get the call as the guy that would actually face off against Tanahashi, but they went with Goto, didn't want any interpromotional nonsense. So he went ahead and said, okay, I'll go ahead and be in the 6-man.
Yeah. No, I was hoping we'd get some Nakajima, Hideki, Suzuki interaction just so we could see how long Suzuki would pin Nakajima after the 3 count this time. But no, Nakajima inserted into this match when Naomichi Marufuji was injured, and instantly, so Nakajima gets put in this match. They do a press conference. Nakajima slaps the hell out of his tag partner, Kotoge.
Yeah, and Jesus.
Immediately gets more attention on this show than anything up to this point in the run-up to it. Again, a guy who was not even booked until an injury, and he generates more interest in this show than anything else. That trio will take on Tetsuya Endo, Jun Akiyama, and Kazusada Higuchi. Should be an awesome 6-man, but it's kind of crazy that there is no big DDT title match as one of the 3 main matches on the show this year.
Yeah, by the way, burning there with Higuchi is like the extreme warfare revenge. Like, okay, you're going to create a stable. Like, ooh, yeah, I like this. Like, for me, I like that a whole lot there. But yeah, it actually is a surprise that they didn't have a feature DDT match. Is there, again, I have no idea what the particular reasons are, especially when you have 79 matches on this show. But yeah, I was a little surprised by that.
Yeah, it's definitely odd to me. I mean, basically, you've got the interpromotional Noah versus DDT match with Kenno versus Daisuke Sasaki kind of taking the place on the card, in comparison to last year. of the KOD title
don't,
match.
Don't want to overshadow the pheromones match.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Dandy
Yuki Ino. You've got Yuki Sexy Ino, Yumihito Fantastic Imanari, and Denshoku Dandy Dino teaming with Akito to take on Shin Aoki, Senshiro Takagi, Yumika Hota, and Kendo Kashin.
I got to vote for Senshiro Takagi to be in the Hall of Fame.
Honestly, it's one of the more interesting cases when you think about a guy that ran this bizarre, wacky, very much not geared to whether it be an American sensibilities of wrestling or comedy promotion in DDT, that somehow has become one of the biggest power brokers in all Japanese pro wrestling and by extension pro wrestling as a whole. It's a fascinating story.
Yeah, Kenny Omega's in the Japanese wing of the Observer Hall of Fame basically because of DDT and because of Ibushi, who's not in, and probably going to be an interesting year to see how he does. Yeah. But you know, Takagi, when he, again, he came on the ballot, and it's a very interesting story. It's a very interesting success story, and they seem to have, again, their ability to live and thrive and then just live has been impressive.
Yeah, it really is wild. And I mean, you know, it's another podcast that it's a topic we can discuss on a later episode, kind of where DDT is in all of this too, because like Noah right now, rightfully so, gets crushed for what they're doing. But, you know, DDT isn't really, to use Dave Meltzer's terminology, knocking them dead right now either. And with Konosuke Takeshita, you know, he's not going to be back on a regular basis in DDT anytime soon, it doesn't seem. I mean, that they talked about his excursion to the U.S., and elsewhere, you know, potentially going for as long as a year. And when you look at what he's doing in AEW, his independent bookings, he's going to be going over to Europe this summer. You know, he's not going to be back. It doesn't seem like much this year. And, you know, Endo as champion doesn't necessarily seem to be the answer right now either. So I don't know. It'd be interesting to see it. This Cyber Fight Festival show is happening at a really intriguing time for really all three companies. And I guess four, if you want to throw Gambare Pro in the mix as well. But the three main companies in DDT, Noah, and Tokyo Joshi Pro. Just very interesting to see how this draws and if this does well, what it does compared to last year. And what, if any, ramifications there are if this, you know, if this show ends up bombing.
Well, I can't see it bombing. You know, I can't see it bombing. Yeah, and I guess if it does, it's just you don't run a card altogether again. You know, and then if you are going to run a card with everybody on it, it's going to be in association with New Japan. You know what I mean? Or something like that where, again, if it's that bad where it's considered a bomb, I mean, I think the only thing you can do is either shrug your shoulders, look and say, okay, what wasn't on this wild, old school DDT style, you know, whatever match or whatever.
Well, yeah, the DDT versus Congo crazy, ridiculous 5-on-5 match last year. You don't have anything to that level this year.
And that's, you know, and that's, I guess you would either go, okay, well, this is what we're going to do next time around, or you just kind of throw your hands up and go, oh, nobody really wanted this. You know, we'll just concentrate on running, you know, to getting TJP back up to where it should be and Noah being Noah and whatever.
Or you take the lesson from this, which is the most terrifying thought of all, that, well, the reason we didn't draw is because we weren't able to run that Muto versus Fujita match that we had originally wanted to.
Will you stop it?
It is, though. I mean, as we close this out, you look at this card. While this is a Cyber Fight Festival show, and this is all the promotions represented, like what this draws or what it doesn't draw, in a lot of ways still is a referendum on Pro Wrestling NOAH, because the only thing that's even remotely close to being a potential draw here on this show is Goshi Ozaki versus Satoshi Kojima.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's going to once again speak to what, you know, the direction of Pro Wrestling NOAH. Is it working? Is it not working? I think we all know the answer to that, at least if we're being honest with ourselves, which is sometimes a problem in the online wrestling community. But While the show itself is not one that I'm, you know, really looking forward to from an in-ring perspective, as I said a few times, it's maybe so far from a draw and business perspective the most interesting and sort of tough to call show going into it, you know, what it's going to do.
You know, career-wise, I love Muta. But, you know, I didn't want to see him anywhere near the title picture or anywhere near a lot of things that weren't just him being a legend and that's it and that's all. With Kojima, it's a little bit of a different story, and I think he's only going to be a transitional champion anyway that probably ends up leading to more shenanigans. I know you're worried about that, but maybe I'm a hypocrite for saying this, but a short reign with him, I think, you know, I don't know if it is going to help business, and maybe I'm being hypocritical because I was so down on some of the other older guys being in there, but I think you can do something creative with Kojima, and at the end of the day, you don't have to worry about him, you know, not looking bad, you know, putting your guy over, you know, look, we're looking bad, putting your guy over at the end of the whole thing, which I, you know, who that person is, I don't know if it's, you know, is it Fujita again? There's so many horrors when it comes to who it could be, but I hope it's somebody that actually, you know, could actually use it a lot more. You go ahead and pick any name on there that you want.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked about it before.
And again, does it really, really matter? No, but again, it's somebody to put Kojima's name as a notch on their belt. Wukeno or Kitamiya, who doesn't, I don't care who it is. It's a nice notch on the name. That's why it, to me, should be somebody like that, and it really shouldn't, it can't be, but it really shouldn't be a Fujita or somebody like that.
No, I mean, the only, I would definitely not say, as much as I like them, not Keno and not Kitamiya, the only thing, Noah's entire focus right now should be on rehabbing Kaito Kiyomiya, getting him out from under the horrendous booking that really took place from the moment that that Nosawa took over several years ago, running the booking for the company. He needs to be rehabbed and be gotten out from under everything that happened, most notably the losses to Muto, just the positioning with Muto. Everything needs to be centered around what is the best, biggest, and most effective way to, whether it be a 3-month plan, a 6-month plan, a 1-year plan, or a 2-year plan, getting Kaito Kiyomiya to be the face of Pro Wrestling Noah in a way that the fans will believe, the fans will trust, and can turn him into the draw that he, by all rights, should be. And, you know, whether that's Satoshi Kojima winning and going on a run and eventually dropping the title to him, I don't know that that's the most effective thing. I think it's more effective than any of the other guys that they've attempted to put into that role, particularly given that all those other guys aren't going to agree to lose to him anyway. But it all needs to be about mitigating and then repairing the damage to Kiyomiya and going forward with him as the top star. But there's zero evidence that the regime that is in power, whatever combination that is right now of Kendo Kashin and the returning Nosawa Rangai, there's just zero evidence that that's the direction they're going to go with them.
He will be.
I guess you could have Rob Van Dam beat Goshi Ozaki for the title. And
stop.
Then, you know, after Rob Van Dam most likely pins stop. Kaito Kiyomiya here, then Kiyomiya can go on his redemption arc and beat Rob Van Dam for the GHC title.
Stop it. It'll be 26 on July 17th, Kiyomiya will. And it's the frustrating part is he's so damn talented, and things shouldn't be the way they are right now for Noah, although some will argue why they believe it should be. But we've argued enough against that. And Adam, I don't know what else you've got here, but I'm pretty much tapped out as far as my thoughts for the week.
Yeah, I think it's time to wrap it up. We could talk about a bunch more stuff. We're 90 minutes in. and we all know 90 minutes is the ideal time for a wrestling TV show, and it should be the ideal time for a podcast as well. So we should wrap it up. Do want to mention a few things that I've got going on beyond this podcast. Wrestling at Random, the show that I do each and every week with Jeremy Deemer, is available at wrestlingatrandom.com. You can search Wrestling at Random on any podcatcher of your choice, including wherever you're listening to the Big Audio Nightmare right now, We are in a season break as far as new episodes of Wrestling at Random, but if you've never listened to it before, we've got upwards of 100 free episodes of that show for you to listen to. It's evergreen content. We review randomly chosen wrestling shows, whether they be pay-per-views, a random episode of weekly TV, anything we can find. Randomly chosen, we watch it, we review it. It's all there for you to listen to. We also have a Patreon with bonus content, additional episodes that are not found on the free feed. That continues even during the season break. We have new episodes there. And when I say it's random, it's random. The show that just went up on the bonus content feed for Wrestling at Random was us reviewing the WWE documentary, The Life and Times of Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig.
Ooh.
So, yeah, I mean, it can be that on any given week. It might be a couple Kenta Kobashi Pro Wrestling Noah matches. It could be an episode of Southeast Championship Wrestling from 1983. You never know what we're going to have at Wrestling at Random. So you can check that out. The bonus content, patreon.com/wrestlingatrandom. The other thing that I've got going on is not on the audio side. It's on the written word side, and it very much applies to the same things we talk about on the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare. It is my Substack newsletter. Three Count Fall is what I call it. I am 19 issues in, started it at the beginning of this year, and you can subscribe for free to that. Go to adamsummers.substack.com. New issue just came out yesterday, covering in even more depth than we did today a lot of the same topics that we talked about on this week's episode of the Big Audio Nightmare. So feel free to check that out as well and spread the word. I'd love for you to read that and let me know what you think.
You know, I do something else as well, because I, too, love professional wrestling, as you do. And that passion of that, you can tell when you're going back, spinning back to the past, talking about all these things you may have watched when you were a kid or were a smart kid and just completely avoided. But now some crazy person on Patreon said, no, we're going to torture you by having you guys watch that sort of stuff. I love that sort of stuff, too. And that's why I do the Mid-Atlantic Championship podcast, which you can find midatlanticpod.com. Anywhere you find your fine podcasts out there, including the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare, that's where you can find the Mid-Atlantic Championship podcast, a celebration of Jim Crockett Promotions from 1933 to 1988. A special focus when it comes to the Twitter feed on the Dusty Rhodes era, because that's where we have the most film and that's when we have a whole lot going on. Just a couple days ago, on this day in JCP TV history, we had one worldwide show that had Mr. Electricity Steve Regal coming back to team with gorgeous Jimmy Garvin to jump on Wahoo McDaniel. Why is that a big deal? They were the former AWA World Tag Team Champions. They beat the Road Warriors. That's how that went down. And there they are reuniting on the same show where Ole Anderson comes back and makes the Three Horsemen four again at the end of the show, jumping Dusty Rhodes. On the same show where you have Nikita Koloff and Magnum TA, and Magnum TA knocking out Bob Geigel, and the rumor and the whole decision being made, best of seven series, something that we still actually look at today, still do today. That's the benchmark, that best of seven series, which started on that show. I take those shows like that, and go ahead and break them up and put clips up on Twitter, put them up there with some knowledge for you of what was going on at the time. And that's what the podcast does as well, too. Look at the one week in time and Jim Crockett Promotions history, tell you what's going on the show, tell you what's taking place behind the scenes, tell you what's going on in the wrestling world and how everything fit in all together, because damn it, I'm a pro wrestling fan. And you can support that show on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook, on wherever. It's midatlanticpod.com, unless it's Patreon, which is Mid-Atlantic Podcast. That's where you can find that there. So we do that as well as, of course, obviously, I do Wrestling Observer Live with Brian Alvarez, which you can find out everything you need to know at the main page, f4wonline.com, when you go there. And Adam still had the thing on mute right now. after that whole long
that's
ramble.
That's me trying to recover from thinking about everything you have to deal with doing Wrestling Observer Live.
Holy smokes. The last couple of weeks, we went from Sasha to MJF to Cody's Peck, and holy shit.
One word, bruh. On that note, let's close it up.
I thought that would have been a good way to do it there. So the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare, we shall, I don't know if it'll be a week from now, but it won't be too much after that. So we shall see you soon.